Back to My Garden, episode 29.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
Do you love homegrown tomatoes? Me too. Free Report reveals the 5 dirt cheap tools I use to grow 22 types of heirloom tomatoes, including my secret soil booster. Download your copy for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/freereport. Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and frankenfood? Don't panic, grow organic. Discover my new resource for organic gardening. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another edition of Back to My Garden. Buckle up, kids. We've got a great guest going all the way to the Pacific Northwest today. Adam Cortell is passionate about suburban homesteading. For the last 8 years, he's been building on about a half acre, documenting it on a fantastic blog called Digging the Garden. We're going to talk about that. There's an eclectic, see, I pulled out the $10 word today, eclectic topics ranging from building your own morning glory trellis to how to build a homemade chicken water. Talent, Oregon is the place. Adam is the guest. Adam, welcome to the call.
Hi, welcome. Good to talk with you, Dave.
How's everything in Oregon today?
Well, it's good. It's been really quite hot here for a while now. Mm. Hot days, but still cooling down at night a bit, so not too bad.
Lovely. Now, I want to hear your story, and the listeners for sure want to get to know you a little bit, Adam. Why don't you take a minute or two, tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you discovered gardening.
All right. Well, I grew up in southern Oregon on the coast, outside of Brookings, Oregon. And we had 10 acres there, and we lived about 8 miles out of town. And I didn't really realize it at the time, but really was growing up on a homestead. We had chickens and ducks, goats, sheep. And we had a big garden, an orchard. And also my parents had a rhododendron nursery. So they would grow rhododendrons up to about 2 gallon size and then sell them to regional nurseries around. And so I spent just a ton of time up in the garden, all over the property, and it backed right up to, you know, basically you could go out our back door and just keep going for miles, and it was just, you know, forest and cow country and that sort of thing. We also had, you know, wood stoves for heating and for cooking and solar hot water. We actually had, hot water heating coils going through the stove. So if you wanted hot water, you pretty much had to wait for the sun or have a fire going. And that wasn't much of a problem. And from there I went on to Oregon State University and traveled around a bit, and then went to Southern Oregon University and got my teaching certificate. And I've been mostly second grade, also a little bit of third grade teacher for about 16 years now. This was my 16th year last year. So that's been great. I'm actually taking a year off this next year, a leave of absence. I want to focus on, you know, the garden and trying to get an online business going and that sort of thing. So we'll see which directions that leads me.
Awesome. All right. Now, if you're driving in your car, stuck in rush hour traffic listening to this podcast, keep both hands on the wheel. I'll have Adam's links up on the show notes. Adam has a fantastic blog. It's www.adamcortell.com. That's ADAMCORTELL.com. Link in with their... I was going to say LinkedIn with Adam on Twitter, but LinkedIn is its own thing. Adam's on Twitter, very big Twitter following, at Adam Cortell. There are people right now driving the car listening to you growing up on 10 acres wishing they could get out of the city because their gardens are little, you know, apartment studios with a patio or a couple of containers. Do you have any scope of how big 10 acres was when you were a little kid?
Well, you know, it kind of expanded when I one of my first memories was just looking out the front porch, you know, when I was really young, and just seeing, you know, the field. And from there, as I grew, my my kind of vision of where I lived continued to expand as we, you know, explored the whole 10 acres and then went on spilling over the edges and heading onto the neighbor properties, of course, with permission. But yeah, so a lot of it was forest, you know, the Southern Oregon coast there, it's kind of a rainforest. So a lot of it was alders and fir trees, but we had quite a few areas that were, you know, it's a lot of work. You're definitely trying to keep the berry stickers down and the grass and the weed eating and all that.
Fantastic. And so like me, you kind of grew up dirty and outside and playing and being in the garden. I want to talk to you a little bit about when you grew up and you said, I'm going to grow something. Do you remember that moment when you said, I'm going to go get some dirt and a seed and grow something? What was that like for you?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I don't have a really specific memory of that. I spent a lot of time, I know, with my mom up in the garden area and the orchard just from a really young age. So it just sort of was a natural thing that just occurred on a daily basis. I do remember, though, that I have three sisters and one brother, all older than me, and we all got to have our own little garden plot, you know, within the larger garden. And so I remember, you know, planting that and mostly planting, I guess, I remember peas and carrots. I also remember a little bit of raiding that went on with my siblings for the choice peas. And from there, you know, I have memories of being up there with my dad, using the big old tiller, watching him for years until I was kind of old enough to take a turn at, you know, at least down the length of the garden. And then he would grab it and make the turn, and I would walk it back the other way. So lots of memories. And from there, you know, I just feel like I've always been a gardener. There's been times where I was traveling or maybe had to live in an apartment where I could only have a few containers or just a little, you know, a little patch out the door. But it's always either been growing lots of things or just sort of dormant, waiting till I can get back to the dirt.
Nice. You got some excellent photos on your blog of your new property. It's pretty large, isn't it? Like a half acre nearly?
Yeah, it's just a little under half an acre. It's 4/10 of an acre. And originally, we were going to build a house on half of it and then divide the lot and build a house on the other half and then sell them and then move on to, you know, the quote-unquote dream location. But then the housing market kind of crashed. And so I was a little bit slow out the gate as far as gardening on the whole property. Just because at one point I thought, you know, we're going to have another house, we're going to divide the lot. And so for the last few years, maybe 3 or 4 or 5, we've definitely just decided this is a great place to be and we're going to stick around. And so I've really started planning out the whole property. So I still have lots to go. It's like two large, you know, city lots. It's 4/10 of an acre. So it's like a, you know, just like a double lot.
But it wasn't quite in pristine, you know, turn the key and drive away kind of condition when you got it, was it?
No, when we first saw it, there was a single wide mobile on it, and it was pretty much a clean slate. There was just a field fence on the back with blackberries growing over it, and let's see, the single wide, and everything else, there was no trees on it. It's really nothing. It was just flat ground.
Just a blank canvas waiting for some love.
That's right.
Nice.
Yeah.
What was your ambition like that first year? Did you say, oh, I'm going to just do the whole thing, or did you do it in pieces?
Well, I had to do it in pieces. When we first bought it, I took out the field fence and all the blackberry brambles and put in an 8-foot-high cedar fence in the back and then another fence down the side. And then we got our house built that we're living in. And from there, you know, worked mostly just landscaping the front and backyards, and then started, I have some wine, like half wine barrels, whiskey barrels, right on the back of the house. I think those went in first, about 5 of those, and I grow lots of basil and, you know, different things in those. And from there, it's just been expanding and, you know, definitely takes time and energy and some years to get it all set up.
What's been the most challenging aspect of pretty much starting from square one? What has really been the challenging part for you?
Well, I'm going to have to say there was two main challenges. One, I think, is common for many people, almost everybody perhaps, unless you're really blessed, and that was just really poor soil. We have lots of clay. In the summer, it bakes, you know, hard as anything. And then the other was I had this problem with earwigs, which when I lived at a different house about 3 miles away, I really didn't notice. And then I moved to this property, and there was just earwigs everywhere, a plague of them. I can't even, well, I'll just kind of tell you, the earwigs would get like onto my strawberries and chew up the blooms. They would then, eat the berries as they're ripening around the base, and they'd get on my raspberries and just kind of suck each little bit of raspberry till they were desiccated. If I planted out any seedlings, they would chew them up. Carrots, they would mow them down as soon as they sprouted. And so for me, I was about ready to give up. I mean, I was really frustrated because I went out and I would take my headlamp out and I would, you know, go around and pop them into a container or just squish them with my fingers. And that really wasn't too effective. I mean, I took out hundreds of them, but there was probably thousands and thousands. And then I set up a little oil baths. If you put just in a little plastic container some vegetable oil, they'll get attracted to it and they climb in and drown themselves. And I put those all around, and that worked. I mean, I caught hundreds and hundreds of earwigs in them, to the point, I mean, they were just disgusting. They were full of earwigs to the point where no more earwigs could drown because the container was, you know, half full of earwigs. And that did not solve my problem. And so then I got some chickens. I was hoping that maybe the chickens would be good, you know, go around and eat earwigs. And they do like to eat earwigs, but the earwigs come out at night and the chickens roost at night. So that wasn't really a good match. Plus, I couldn't have the chickens, you know, foraging everywhere, right in the garden and the, you know, the plants. So finally, I had a neighbor of mine mention this product called Sluggo Plus. And I imagine, Dave, that you've heard of it. Sluggo Plus is for slugs and snails. It has iron phosphate in it that controls the slugs and snails, but it also has a spinosad. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. It's a naturally occurring bacterium in it that works for the earwig. So they're these little pellets you scatter around, and they are for organic gardening. I mean, they're not toxic or anything. And they control earwigs and pill bugs and I think cutworms, and then of course slugs and snails. And so I started using that, and you just scatter it around almost like it was a fertilizer. And I think what happens is that it affects the earwig's nervous system. It makes them kind of hyperactive. And I've noticed after I apply it, I'll see earwigs out in the middle of the day where they really shouldn't be out. And that was very effective. I basically got my garden back after that. I mean, I just can't even begin to tell you how many earwigs we had. Like, I'd put up a tree swallow box. I had a nesting tree swallow, and then at one point the swallow left, and we opened up the box, and there was the nest, and it was just crawling with earwigs. I don't know if the earwigs scared off the swallow, but they were just everywhere. So that was kind of my big challenge, and I feel like I've found a cure for that. I sound like an ad for Sluggo Plus, but I can't really recommend it enough if you have an earwig problem.
Adam, I've seen horror movies that are less scary than the story you just told. My wife is cringing. She does all the transcription, and she hates them.
Yeah, you know, you'd pick up a board, and there'd be just a few hundred of them. And it was something else. I don't know, and I don't know if it was something about the soil, or I don't understand quite why I had so many here, and I think the neighboring properties probably have just as many. And I know because we live in a fairly arid, you know, climate here, as things dry up, the only thing that's moist and succulent for the earwigs left is, you know, the things that I'm trying to propagate and grow. So then they really go to it.
congratulations on persistence and, you know, going to war with the earwig problem.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a bit of a battle there for a few years.
I guarantee right now, a bunch of listeners are just so grateful for you telling that story, because Sluggo Plus is not known all over the world. And, you know, in England, they use Guinness beer in a little saucer, and the slugs go in and drink the Guinness. And like your little oil traps.
Right.
And yeah, Sluggo Plus, we're going to look it up and share some science there. That's awesome.
Yeah, check it out. It's definitely effective.
Now, you teach. Are they little kids? What age?
I teach second graders, seven and eight-year-olds.
All right. I understand. So when you come home and you garden, what do you get from it on, you know, some people garden for vegetables and some for beautiful flowers, but for some people, it's almost therapeutic or recharging. What's it like for you?
It's definitely therapeutic and recharging. I mean, I just love it. I love the whole process, just from even, you know, preparing the soil and getting everything ready and the anticipation about and the planning of what I'm going to grow. And then, of course, there's planting the seeds. That's always fun. And just, you know, waiting for them to germinate and sprout to actually growing it and the plants. And that can be, of course, a little bit of a gamble, or you never know what weather or insects you might have. So that can be a little exciting. Mm-hmm. And then the harvest is great. I mean, it's really fabulous to have fresh organic fruit and produce that you can get right out of your garden. I mean, it just tastes so much better than a lot of times things you can buy at the store.
I was captivated when you were telling us about when you were growing up. You guys sold rhododendrons to nurseries.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it was neat. We would take, well, I was a little bit on the younger end. My siblings are all older than me. But, you know, we take cuttings and dip them in a growth hormone. And then we had a propagating house, a little greenhouse that had, you know, good potting soil in it. And so then they would grow, sprout and grow into, you know, little seedlings in there. And then they'd be planted into 1 gallon pots for a year, and then up to 2 gallon or maybe up to 3 gallon. And then usually at the 2 gallon size, we would sell them.
Nice. Now, your place today, because you have a career and you're busy, what's your garden like this season?
Well, this season, I feel a little bit frustrated with my garden, and in that we had such a mild spring. I mean, we didn't have a frost. I think our last frost was in March or something, and often it's in April or early May. And so I feel like I'm a little bit behind, but right now I have quite a few tomatoes going. I have some great poblano peppers that are producing. Earlier in the spring, I had a nice crop of carrots and kale, peas, you know, all those cool crops. I have some, of course, zucchini and yellow squash and a ton of cucumbers right now. I don't even know hardly what to do with them, all those big, you know, the long ones. So we're making cucumber salads and trying to keep up with those. I have some fruit trees that I planted recently, and we had a great crop of cherries. And I had my first apricots off the apricot tree. We have some peaches and nectarines coming along. So I'm really excited about that.
When you look at your garden this season, is anything surprising you or is anything frustrating you?
I guess I'm a little bit surprised with all the cucumbers. Last year I had an invasion of cucumber beetles, striped cucumber beetles, that pretty well decimated my cucumbers, pumpkins, and squash. And so I was just really excited about getting a good crop of cucumbers, and now I'm just amazed at how prolific they are. It's sort of the 180 degree turn from last year. So, and then I guess frustrations, I just want more tomatoes now. I'm only getting a little trickle, so come on, tomato plants, get going.
You surprised me. I had no idea you get a killing frost that late in the spring.
What's that?
When do you generally plant your garden?
I don't generally plant out, you know, hot weather stuff until later May, early June, maybe tomatoes and peppers. A lot of times if you plant them around here, if you try to get them in really early, the soil temperatures really haven't warmed up enough, and we end up with some cool weather and maybe even a frost up until Mother's Day. And so they mostly just sort of sit there until it really starts to warm up. So I usually get... But we have a great, you know, we can plant, I can plant peas and carrots and broccoli, cabbage, all those cool crops in like mid-February, and they carry it right up through, you know, May or early June. So we have a nice long growing season, but.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what I pictured for weather in your part of Oregon, but that makes sense now. Is you got stuff going in March.
Yeah.
That's weather, yeah. That can handle the weather. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, especially if you have some raised beds or like I have these half wine barrels on the south side of the house where they really, you know, get some good solar radiation, and I can plant things in there really early.
I'm about an hour and a half away from Detroit.
Uh-huh.
And the first sunny day in March, people are in their parkas shoveling snow off the garden beds, dreaming. And it just kind of like lights the fuse on the dynamite. The, you know, it's still in the low 40s, but people catch the frenzy early.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do anything until, you know, after Mother's Day.
Ah, wow. Yeah, we can have, you know, snow in March and April, but it usually is just an inch or so and it'll melt off real quick. And so, and, you know, and then our growing season goes sometimes... Gosh, into November, we'll still have, you know, lots of summer stuff hanging on.
You know, on your blog, you've got so much, so many projects, kind of handyman, do-it-yourself DIY. Is that all self-taught, or have you been taking classes?
That's pretty much all self-taught. I love to just get in there and, you know, think up something and design it and then construct it. So I've been doing a lot of work on, you know, interiors of houses and remodeling bathrooms, putting in hardwood floors, building pergolas, gates, fences for years now. That's something that I'm really, really love to do is the actual construction end of the landscaping around my garden. And so, yeah, I think I just have to say I'm pretty much self-taught. I haven't taken any classes or anything.
Fantastic. Let's take a quick minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play five quick questions. Attention gardeners, do you love perennial flowers? Get a free online catalog and 10% off your first order of bulbs at Bloomin' Bulbs. I set up a link just for podcast listeners. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/bulb for your special bonus. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish-powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. Now's the time in the show when we get to play our favorite game called Five Quick Questions. This is where you drop wisdom and experience for the rookie gardeners. Are you ready to play, Adam?
I'm ready. I hope I can do us proud here.
Yeah. Question one. In your opinion, what do you think stops most people from trying gardening?
Well, I think probably it's knowledge and confidence coupled with time. I mean, I think a lot of people are just so busy with their lives and trying to get to work and back and the kids and everything and dinner that they don't take the time out to try to dive in there and get something started with gardening. I think that's probably the main thing, kind of the knowledge and confidence to get started.
Good. Now, you've grown up with dirt under your fingernails. You've studied. What is the single best piece of gardening advice that you've ever received?
Well, I was trying to think back where something just thunderstruck me, and nothing came to mind, but I think mostly getting out of the soil, if you have bad soil, which is what many of us have, and getting into a container or raised bed, especially if you're just getting started with gardening. I mean, I think it's just so critical maybe to start with a couple containers, raised bed, see how that goes, work on building up your soil, get some really good quality soil and, you know, compost and organic matter built up in there, and then, you know, continue to branch out from there.
Nice. Excellent. And you talked about gaining knowledge, and the internet is a vast resource now for gardeners. Other than your blog, what are two websites that you would share with a beginning gardener?
Well, I have been exploring lots of different blogs and sort of choosing out different blog posts to share on Twitter. And so I keep coming back to a ton of good information from gardeningknowhow.com. They just have this great library of posts that they've done on their website on all sorts of different topics in gardening. So you can check out gardeningknowhow.com. And then the other one is a little maybe more general, and that is to check out your university extension site, because there's just a tremendous amount of good information. There's no advertising or, you know, pop-ups on it. I know I've spent some time on the California University extension site, and our Oregon State University has a good one. I think it was Minnesota that I really liked, had lots of good information. So check out some of those university extension sites.
Let me put a plug in for your blog, because you've got an entire section, almost like a resource catalog of all those university links, don't you?
Yeah, I went through all 50 states and put in a link that actually links straight to their gardening page, whatever, because a lot of times they'll have lots of stuff on, you know, farming and agriculture, and I put a link in that should go straight to their actual, like, home garden information page.
Very good. That's at adamcortell.com. If you're going to move from Detroit to Florida, what used to grow in Detroit will not grow in Florida.
That's right.
Go to the university. And it's not opinion. It's all curated and just a tremendous resource. Speaking of tremendous resources, I love to read. I'm building my gardening library. Can you recommend a great gardening book that you think I should read?
Well, I was thinking about this, and I realized I spend so much of my time diving into the internet lately that I haven't been consuming a lot of gardening books, which I think I need to brush up on. But one that I always pull out is the Sunset Western Garden book, and it's really more of an encyclopedia. It has information on all the climate zones, lists of plants for shady areas, lists of plants to, you know, attract beneficial insects and pollinators, and a whole encyclopedia of plant identification, and really a lot of information in it. So that's a great one.
Sunset,
of course,
Western Garden?
Western Garden book, so okay. Maybe not so much for part of the country, but it's a good one.
Oh, as an aside, total tangent, what's the bee situation or the bee conversation like in Oregon?
Well, you know, over on the coast where I grew up, there seems to be almost no wild honeybees. Most of the pollinators I see over there are bumblebees and native bees. Now, here in the Rogue Valley, where I live, right on the I-5 corridor near Medford, Oregon, Talent is right near Medford, we have a lot of beekeepers, and we have just a ton of bees. I'm not sure. I know they're having some difficulties with colony collapses, but there's definitely a thriving bee business going on here. So they're doing, I would say, pretty well.
Hey, there's some good news. I mean, it's pretty bleak, most of the stories you hear about bees. If it's doing good in Oregon, maybe there's hope.
Well, I'm hopeful, yeah.
I know this year Shauna Coronado talked me into, we're going to plant a milkweed garden for the monarchs, and we're going to do extra flowers next year just near the vegetables just to attract more pollinators.
Oh, very good.
Number five, and this is kind of a fun one. In your opinion, what's the number one thing every gardener should try to grow next year?
Well, I've kind of ties nicely in with the bees. I've been really excited about attracting beneficial insects to my garden that can help control, you know, pest insects. And so I would recommend an herb garden, just because almost all of the, like, basil, oregano, sage, dill, fennel, cilantro, are just tremendously good for attracting beneficial insects, hoverflies, and all sorts. So, you know, if you just planted a good herb garden and let it go to bloom, you're going to have both your herbs and be attracting honeybees, bumblebees, and lots of other beneficial insects. So I think that's what I would recommend.
Fantastic. I was nodding and smiling when you said cilantro. I'm a big fan. That's my favorite herb in salsa.
Yes.
Awesome.
Unfortunately, here, it gets so hot so fast in the summer, the cilantro tends to bolt really fast. So it's tricky to...
But I guess with your long season, you could take another crack at it.
Yeah, it actually does better here in the earlier spring and in the fall, and it's fairly tolerant to frost, so it does okay.
Awesome. Adam, you've been a phenomenal, fantastic guest. I want everyone who's listening along, now if you're jogging, listening to your iPod, don't worry, you know, when you get home, do it. Follow Adam on Twitter, at Adam Cortell, two L's. And go to his blog, www.adamcortell.com. Check out some of his projects. He's got excellent photography as well. Adam, I actually want to give you the last word today. Do you have either a pearl of wisdom or maybe a note of encouragement for our listeners on their gardening adventure?
I guess I would probably go more for a note of encouragement. Again, just starting small with some containers, get some really good soil and some potting mix in there, and just get started and grow something and learn from it. I mean, it definitely, there are challenges and there's some learning that needs to happen to have a successful garden. I mean, I've been frustrated with poor soil and insects, but don't give up. Be persistent and dive in there and, you know, create some little garden heaven right there in your patio or in your backyard.
Fantastic. Adam, thank you so much for being on the show.
All right. Well, thank you, Dave. I really appreciate it.